Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it is Healthy Gut Girl, Kitty Martone. This is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know, and I am coming to you live from deep inside your thyroid. What? Not your gut this time, friends. I am so excited because this is a guest I have been wanting on for months and months. She is fantastic. I read her book, and I gotta say, it really has changed my life. It's changed my perspective on not just my practice and the way I work with people and the information I share in my group. It's changed some big positions that I hold on gut health. And that is fascinating, you know, to just have to be working one way with gut health and then all of a sudden say, wow, this could be the reason I'm not getting anywhere with some people and have still some, you know, issues with my own health that I could correct. And it's been tremendous. And I love her book. It is called How to Heal Your Metabolism. And the author is Kate Deering. She has, for 28 years, she's been involved in the health and fitness industry, helping men and women of all ages achieve optimal health and wellness. Her practice is based on a holistic approach to health and wellness by looking at the entirety of a person's well-being. A person's well-being includes diet, stress, exercise, posture, sleep, digestion, hormones, mindset, and lifestyle. She believes maintaining all of these key components are vital to a person's overall health and happiness. Her expertise is based on certifications in Czech exercise coach, Czech holistic lifestyle coach 2, it's called, Olympic lifting coach, resistive stretching practitioner, and certified nutritional consultant. And just her delivery and her research, her delivery is amazing. Her research is very robust, and the way she helps people is incredible, and you have to get her book. So I'm not going to say anything else. Just take out a pad of paper and a pen and take notes, and then listen to it and listen to it again, because it's going to shed some light on all the things you are probably doing incorrectly on your health journey. I like in the beginning of your book is you talk about your good friend Bridget. Is it Bridget Smith that you?
Britch. Yeah, it is a real, based on a real person. I said Britch because she's your friend that you always think is a real bitch because obviously she's skinny and doesn't do anything. So I called her Britch in the book.
Well, guess what? That was me.
Lucky you.
I don't know what ultimately happened to Britch, but I realized quite recently that I was just running on adrenaline and cortisol and my emergency hormones from day one. And, you know, was super skinny, but I was never eating and all this stuff. And then I got to this point where I was just on the edge of peri going into menopause, and I started gaining all this belly fat. And we won't even talk about all the hormonal issues that I had throughout life, but I was still skinny. And I end up gaining like way too much weight. And so I decided to do the Bulletproof. Now I've been teaching gut health for a while, and there, you know, all the gut health, you know, education I have thinks intermittent fasting is great. And so I was like, I'm going to give it a go. So I did Bulletproof for, 2 weeks, and I lost 12 pounds like that. And I was working out hard for me. Like it was this plate fit power plate class for like 30 minutes. And I was just giving it my all, and I had all this energy. I had lost all this belly fat, but I wasn't sleeping. And I, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I couldn't keep my eyes open. So at that same time, I was meeting I'm going to call it the repeat circle. I was meeting, you know, Georgie Dinkoff and Danny Roddy and all these great, wonderful people, and learning about my actual hidden issue here and realizing that everyone in the group just about has this sluggish metabolic mess happening. So you really just came into my life and all your diet to everything. And I was already close to that diet, but now, you know, I'm a little more on it, and it's, I've gained weight, a lot of that weight back, And, but I'm sleeping. And the first thing I noticed, and then I'll let you just tell me what you think of all this. The first thing I noticed was I started pooping more. I was having like, I went from having like 1 BM to like going to sometimes 3 times, like normal, like really healthy. And I thought, I'm on the right path here. This is definitely right, even though I'm gaining weight. So yeah, that's my story.
Which is always the caveat for a lot of people, right? It's the instant. And again, I always say you can limit. So if you are coming from a high adrenaline state, certainly it's not everybody. I would say more people that are not are overweight versus underweight in life, unless you have been living on stress hormones. Or some people are just naturally skinny. My bridge friend was actually just naturally skinny. I think she actually had a high running, but it also what ended up happening with her, I think people that naturally do that, and then she was not eating the best foods, and that does eventually start playing an effect on your system. And so yeah, now she's older, hitting menopause, has had children, had late children, so has the menopause weight or additional weight, is having a hard time, because I keep saying to her, you have to correct the system now, right? You probably went from being slightly healthy, or not slightly, you were healthy as a young child. Most kids are usually healthy young. I think it's different in today's society. I think people are actually being, they're sicker much younger. But in my youth, everybody was usually fairly thin, could have had a high running working metabolism. But again, even if you do, and you do destructive things, it's going to start working as effectively for you. And as you get older, if you don't take care of these things, yes, it gets harder as you get older. You can fix them anywhere along the lines, in my opinion. It doesn't matter if you're 30, you're 40, you're 50, you're 60, you can get better and you can improve it. It might just take longer and you might have a few more bumps along the road, because obviously you've had more years on this planet to have negative effects on your system, right?
Yeah.
And again, if you had your history and you were probably in that adrenaline state a lot, you know, and I don't know what you were eating, if you were eating, a lot of those people just don't eat very much because they aren't very hungry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not going to play well out for you. And normally that does look like a lot of hormonal issues. And so I don't know your history, but that can look like a lot of PMS issues for an individual, because you're usually under fueling and you're undernourished. And so if you're not eating a lot of calories, you're definitely not getting enough nutrition in.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of go hand in hand, right? Now, of course, if you're just eating junk and you're eating enough calories, you can still not get enough nutrition in because you're just eating junk. And that can also lead people to feel more hungry because they're longing for nutrition and are just getting calories, empty calories. That's probably the majority of people. They're just over consuming crap, they're skipping meals. I mean, there's a plethora of reasons why people can obviously gain weight. And a lot of times, again, with women, especially if they hit menopause is just like another stress on the system. And if their body is already kind of teetering at that point, because they have a history of not eating right and overstressing their system, menopause is going to set them over the edge, essentially. And then all of a sudden, right, they gain weight. Well, it could have been just kind of teetering, right?
Yeah.
And it could have been happening. It could be this years of accumulation. And that was a thing, right? That was the straw that broke the camel's back, essentially, because can it be quite stressful for the female body. So if we are not prepared for it, properly nourished prior, taking care of ourselves prior, then yeah, it's going to be a lot more challenging for someone to go through. But usually if you see all that belly fat happen, it's normally a lot of it's just cortisol. It's excessive cortisol. You're living in that stress state. And so when you eat carbohydrates, women, as they get older, if they're not adequately fueled, will basically become less sensitive to carbohydrates. So when you consume them, you don't do well with them. You end up storing them. It's like a kind of like just starting of some sort of metabolic syndrome on some level, because now you have this hormone disruption going on. So you will tend to store those. So that's why people gain some body fat, or especially around the belly, as they get older. But it's also, if you look at a diabetic body, it's essentially I'm not saying you had diabetes, but probably started to have some blood sugar issues. A lot of menopausal women do. So certainly the recommendation at that point in time is to go on a low carb diet. Right? Carbs don't work very well for you at this point in time. So let's just remove them altogether. And that does help. And I'm not know specifically what the bulletproof diet is.
It's the Dave Asprey's coffee in the morning with just fat. So it's just fat burning.
So
no
you're
food.
definitely reducing carbohydrates at that point in time, right? Which will push you back into lipolysis, which will help you lose fat. But anytime you put yourself into a fat burning stage, that is beta oxidation is a stress system, right? Mm-hmm. We are pushing our body into a stress cycle anytime we do that, especially while we're awake. Usually if we're burning fat while we're sleeping, it's far less stressful on our system and our muscles, our heart. They actually prefer to use fat as energy.
Mm-hmm.
But in the awake state, when your body actually prefers or your cells prefer to use glucose, that's if we don't give that fuel to them, one of the side effects is metabolic rate drops. So, and then high stress hormones elevate. So someone can actually be burning still a significant amount of calories, but they're burning them in a place that is not going to be supportive to them as far as health wise, right? Aesthetically, it might look better to burn body fat, but if we're not careful, we keep ourselves, we push ourselves more into that stress cycle, then we're going to not sleep. Like, we'll start getting fatigue or energy issues or feel anxious. We start having mood issues. We start having poor hair and nails. A plethora of other things can start occurring. And certainly GI issues are definitely one of those, right? Mm-hmm. In a stress cycle, usually we do not have good GI function. It is interesting because I see both things happening sometimes when people start this. Some become more constipated and some actually have better bowel movements. Mm-hmm. So they can become more constipated because a lot of times if you're on a high adrenaline state, you're running on adrenaline, that alone will help get things through you quick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any sort of adrenaline is going to make you poop more. So sometimes when we reduce that in people, they actually become more constipated. Now, it could be that you're just eating better foods and maybe you took out some foods that weren't very beneficial to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so now if you're eating things like the carrot salad, maybe you're eating coconut oil over seed oils, those things can certainly improve your GI and maybe you're just running better. So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different things that can happen. But yes, I would say if you're having good three bowel movements right now that are formed, that's very good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also have been working on my gut for a good, 17 years doing the gut health thing. So I hope that also plays into it. But I did increase dairy kefir, raw dairy, well, not raw, but fermented dairy kefir. And I also really increased, the ghees and just dairy in general. And I really kind of feel like that's definitely what happened, but it also is what put the weight on, I think. So, so let's, I want to break that down a little more about the weight gain. So when women, either they have a baby or a couple of babies, and then they all of a sudden they're like, I can't lose the weight around my belly no matter what I do. In fact, I work out harder and I get fatter. And that, and also just women who have, like myself, who haven't had children and then who all of a sudden just have that belly fat show up. Now, you said that is a quarter, it's almost always, like, besides bad diet, it's also, but for me, I wasn't really having a horrible diet. But cortisol, I am that person that, like, operates up here. So it was that, just coming to the point where you're running out of hormones, your hormone levels are low, your estrogen is probably dominating everything. And then cortisol is coming in and stealing your progesterone, all that stuff is going on. And that just translates to insulin resistance. Like, even I can't really understand the connection between the insulin resistance part and why that happens at this age and this time for women. Can you explain that?
Okay. So we'll reference insulin resistance. Basically, your body becomes less sensitive to insulin. And so there can be a lot of factors that accumulate in that. Cortisol is definitely one factor. Those two things should work kind of, they're antagonists to each other. Usually if cortisol is high, insulin will be low. The problem happens when, again, in menopause, like I said, it can just be the thing that pushes someone over. And if we look at everything, like I look at everything as what stress is occurring in this person's body. And when I reference stress, I mean, anytime the body isn't meeting its demands energetically or nutritionally, a stress is going to occur. And that's going to occur by certain hormones elevating to try to fix maybe what the lack of energy is, right? If we don't have enough to support, or we're not making enough energy to support our demands, our body is going to shift in certain hormones so that it can find a way to meet those demands. And it's usually going to come with breaking down your tissue or releasing fat into the blood, whatever it needs to do to keep you going, right? So those processes are always happening in the body. Your body's main job is always to just keep you alive. It's not for you to procreate. It's not for you to have good GI function. It's not to do any of those things. Number one, keep you alive. So we have a set of adaptive hormones available to us when we don't have enough energy either coming in or that we can convert into energy so that we can keep our processes going. So there's a lot of different things, whether we can't digest it, absorb it, or at a cell level, we just can't turn it into energy because we don't have enough nutrition or there's something blocking it. So there's a lot of different things that can occur that might not make your body able to make energy to do what it needs to be doing. One of those things is yes, when you're, so the more times your body isn't meeting its demands, right? So we're constantly flipping the switch and going into stress cycle. And that's going to come with elevated cortisol, adrenaline, glucagon, series of other things like histamine, serotonin, other estrogen, all can start going off and are linked to basically this adaptive stress side of our hormonal cycle, right? The other side of it is high thyroid function, right? Which is going to be basically there telling our system to utilize energy in a way that's going to be utilized for our internal functions, right? So I always like to reference like your basal metabolic rate because people are like, yeah, but when I work out, my metabolism goes up. I burn more calories. And I'm like, okay, you do burn more calories, but we want to see what is your body doing at rest when you're not kind of in activity and what is that baseline, right? Because a lot of times I'm getting off some tangents, so you'll have to probably pull me back. But a lot of times when we are exercising, right, although we are burning more calories because, again, our body is always trying to adapt to the stressors upon us. If we do too much, what will happen is our basal metabolic rate will actually lower so that when we're not working out, we actually are burning less calories than maybe we were before when we, you know, before we started doing all this activity.
Okay.
Right. So when people always say exercise increases my metabolism, well, it's not really true. Some can, like weightlifting, like the actual exercise itself isn't increasing your metabolism. What is increasing it is you're just having more muscle mass, right? That alone will increase your metabolism. Muscle is far more, it burns a lot more calories than fat at rest. So that would increase your basal metabolic rate. But something like going out and doing a run for an hour or two or something, that will actually lower your metabolic rate, basal, right? So you'll actually, although you'll burn more calories running, the rest of the day you may burn less because your body's gone through an adaptive process because it's saying, hey, we're going to go do a bunch of activity. If we don't have enough fuel to do that for whatever reason, or it's just because now you're trying to create an efficiency in somebody's system, right? You don't want to, someone's going out to run or somebody who's a professional runner, you don't want to have to be eating every 10 minutes to get through your run. You want to actually be able to get through it without doing any of that. So again, your body is always adapting to these stressors. Exercise is just one. But other stressors, right? You have work stress, emotional stress, anything, again, that's creating some duress on you that is requiring energy for you to keep up with. You got a lot of emotional stress, that's going to be a withdrawal of energy from your system, right? You're walking around all day, that's a withdrawal. All of these things take from you. And if you aren't giving yourself enough fuel to keep up with that, preferably carbohydrates, your metabolic rate is going to down-regulate. Our bodies prefer to use carbohydrates. When we have to utilize fat as energy, beta oxidation, one of the side effects is we have a lowering effect. We drop metabolic rate when we go into that stored body fat arena. Doesn't happen a significant amount, but our body will shift because it does not prefer to use that energy in a state of thinking and doing and so forth. It does prefer that while we are in a resting state. So if we could just lay around all day, then just, your body will utilize fat as energy quite effectively and safely, but that's not what we're doing, right? So getting back to like the menopausal woman, how I see it as is just a series of time that it's starting to occur, right? Maybe it's could be menopause, and that's a significant stress, right? Now your body is essentially the communication between ovaries and pituitary. There's lots of theories of to why women stop ovulating, but essentially say now your ovaries are not producing the same hormones as they did before. So there's a lack of hormones, particularly progesterone in your system. Blood estrogen is also lower as well. And so another stress is occurring in the female body. Now, if you're not supported, which so many women are not nutritionally, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to push you over into this cycle now, this stress cycle. Then women start getting freaked out. So what do? Well, I'm going to start eating less and working out even more. Now you just put more stress on this system that isn't being properly fueled, where it's you're in the cusp right now, right? You're not 20 anymore, where you don't have all these burdens on yourself. You're now 50 and you've tagged them all onto yourself, and now you're going to tag it on more. So yes, you can push that person to stress more body fat off them like that you did for yourself. But what happens? You don't sleep, right? Because sleep is a highly metabolic function. If you have a high, well-running metabolism, you sleep deeply. If you don't, you sleep like garbage. You wake up all the time, you can't just sleep, you feel anxious, tired, fatigue as you wake up, and then the system is just now living over into that stress cycle, right? And those are the people I see that are just literally falling off. Now it can be a pretty tough recovery because, again, they're so depleted. And they've been trying to push them, like you've been in that high adrenaline state for a long time. If you keep going there, what happens is, again, now you hit to the fatigue spot. Now the body's like, nope, now we're not going to do anything. I can't get out of bed. Now I can't do anything, right? Now it's going to make you rest in that place. You have to force it. But to get out now, you've got to really start the road to recovery. And that can be slowly adding in more calories, right? Getting in high nutrient-rich foods, trying to take some of the burden off of your life, right? So that your body can kind of start to try to re-regulate, because it can learn to utilize carbohydrates better. It can learn to use them effectively and not put on a ton of body fat. It just gets trickier the longer you are in it, particularly for women, because you do have that additional stress occur, right, midlife. It's not a bad thing. It's just a process. Right. And so we have to be aware. And that's how I always see it. I go, look, it's another stress that's probably coming at a place in a woman's life that she's just got a lot going on. Maybe, you know, if you do have children still, or some people maybe have grandchildren, there's so many things happening. And if they haven't literally been taking care of themselves in the last decade or two or three, right? It, you know, they're like, it's all of a sudden. I'm like, it's not all of a sudden. It's an accumulation of things. You're just seeing the peak now, right? It's been all under there, and now it's showing its evil little head. And we all think it's all of a sudden and go, oh, it's menopause. You know, that's something. But usually when I uncover and you look inside someone's life, there's a series of things that have probably occurred that have contributed to this all of a sudden effect that you're seeing on your body.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think about the If you're working out and you're doing, you know, this particular fasting or whatever, and you're having these couple of really good results that are great, because like losing weight's a big deal for women. But then there's all these other things, like you just said, that need to be uncovered. And when you uncover those things, you're like, oh, like, for example, you know, having energy throughout the day, like high energy and feeling motivated, and also feeling, you know, like you've lost some weight, people will take that. They'll be like, that's good. I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. But I know that that's not health. I know that's not all health, that's not all there is to health. And I had Keith Littlewood on my show, and he was talking about the 6 markers of good health, and how, you know, you can't just like take a pill for an ill and say, oh, my headache's gone, and never really address all these other things that are going on. And I think that's what women get so exhausted with, especially we talk about this in the group, where it's like, you know, hey, I'm losing weight, I'm out there on the rebounder, or I'm at Pilates and I'm doing great and I have energy finally. I'm not going to let that go. But then meanwhile, it's like such a high price to pay. Hey, I mean, if all those markers are good, if you're sleeping and your libido is good and your digestion is good and all those things that you talk about as well, then great, right? But it's the basal temperature, the pulse and the temperature. So tell me how that works in terms with thyroid. So for those people that have not heard me talk about this yet, because it's fairly new information for me, is I always thought if you fix the gut, you'll fix the thyroid. And that I was so wrong about that. And so, I mean, it helps for sure.
For sure.
But yeah. But when you, if you go to the doctor and you have your thyroid lab done, and they're like, you're fine, we have you on this Synthroid, things are fine, you're fine, your temperature, don't worry about that. We've got you on this, you're doing good. And then you're like, no, I'm not doing good, right? So what's up with taking the pulse and temp? Like, how is this a window into the metabolic health?
Yeah, well, this is a good question. Research has shown that your basal temperature, taking your temperature, is very equated to how well your body is utilizing energy. So years ago, when we actually decided that people should be 98.6 normal body temperature, I think it was utilized, I think 25,000 people were tested to see what the basic underlying, what was the normal body temperature for most individuals. And that's where we got that number. Interesting enough, in today's world, they have actually believed that maybe normal body temperature is now seems to be much lower, meaning people aren't coming in at 98.6 any longer. They're actually coming in at like 97.8. So if they actually, they're deciding the heads that out there, right? Because I've listened to this discussion before, that they just think that people are less inflamed today, because back, and I think, I don't know when, maybe it was the 20s or 30s, that's why their temperatures are lower, that there's not enough, there's less inflammation, so we're running lower. And I'm like, we are not less inflamed. We are one of the most overweight, obese, well, we are as an Americans, but we aren't getting healthier, right? We're becoming more medicated, so maybe some markers look better. Maybe we're living longer, certainly because medications can help live us, whether it's just antibiotics and so forth. Certainly, we aren't dying of the same things that we used to die of before. But are, like, chronic illness, like, skyrocketing? Absolutely. Yeah. So my theories are we are just becoming less metabolically healthy, and that's a true statement. I mean, there's a huge plethora of people that have just do not utilize energy properly. And whether it's because maybe they're eating an abundance of polyunsaturated fats, maybe they're just eating tons of chemicals in their food, maybe they're over consuming, maybe they're just not moving anymore because, you know, our entire society is like, call it, you know, Uber Eats, watch Netflix, we don't have to do anything anymore, right? It's changed. There's a lot of changes that have occurred, and our health has been one of the casualties. So with that, you know, we have to look at, like, okay, so if we are utilizing energy well, things that we produce through cellular metabolism are carbon dioxide, ATP, water, and heat. And so when we produce energy at a high rate, we will produce more heat. Now, the caveat with that is if somebody is living off of adrenaline and or they're breaking down tissue, you will still run at a high temperature, right? So we have to know that if you're waking up and you're like, my temperature is 98.6,
that was
right?
Me.
Yeah. What you'll find is if you eat particularly carbohydrates and then take it again in 20 or 30 minutes, if you are running on adrenaline, your body temperature will actually be lower after food. Right. So what is happening is food, because we metabolize it and it should produce heat, is, like I said, it's one of the effects of going through cellular metabolism. You should be warmer if you eat. But if your body is in a catabolic state and you're running on stress hormones, we know that carbohydrates lower those stress hormones. So if that is the case, when you eat, your body temperature is going to be lower 20, 30 minutes post ingesting it after food. So we have to, like, assess, right? Context is very important when you try to understand using these markers as, you know, but yes, it's a good marker for health. Someone that usually has good thyroid health has good body temperature. They're warm. Have I seen unhealthy people with good body temperature? I absolutely have. And they are usually totally running up in a stress state. Mm. And so we'll see that too. Pulse is another one. Pulse will show you, ideally, you want your pulse between 75 and 90 beats a minute. That's good for metabolic health. You've probably been told by your doctor that 40, 45, 50 is good. Oh, low pulse. That's good. That means you have a sign of fitness. True. And that could be part of that. And just because I always like to say this caveat, because I was very, very fit. And I also had a lot of metabolic issues. So you can be fit and also unhealthy at the same time. Mm-hmm. Right? And a lot of fit people have a lot of metabolic issues, whether they are severely constipated, really have crappy sleep, maybe no sex drive. I mean, it depends on how far you're pushing yourself with your exercise, because again, exercise is a stress on the system. If you are healthy, you should be able to handle a considerable amount, and you can find a lot of benefits from it. If you are not healthy, then doing excessive or extreme exercise is probably going to make you feel worse, or you'll actually, some of these markers will start downregulating, right? Mm-hmm. I am certainly a huge proponent of exercise. I don't want anyone to listen to this, go, oh, Kate said, no, exercise, it's not good, it's stress. I'm like, nope. I said, you need to find the exercise that works for you in your current state of health. Most people can do something and they will find benefit of something. Mm-hmm. But if you are undernourished, stressed out, working 80 hours a week, barely sleeping, and you think going doing CrossFit's a good idea, it is not. Mm-hmm. It would be just too much on your system and you're not going to get any benefit from it because your body's just not in a place to get benefit from it. Mm. Obviously, if you're 20, you can withstand a lot of these things a lot better than somebody that's 40 or 50. Mm-hmm. So that is going to play, not because you're older. I don't want to say it's that. It's just because you've had more years on this planet, maybe, to do destruction to yourself.
Yeah. More years on the chassis, as my mentor used to say.
That's right. That's right.
So this, that's interesting because I think also there's a lot of women like Bridge and myself. You said that she was probably pretty healthy, that throughout my life, I really felt like, everything, and I know there's a lot of women in the group who can relate. I was highly emotional and highly stressed. Everything was, I was an alarmist and everything was dramatic. And, you know, Irene Lyon, the somatic coach, she said, nervous system coach, says, you know, someone can get in a fender bender and be like, oh man, I got a fender bender. What a bummer. And then I can get in a fender bender and I have to call everyone I know. And it's in my system. And that kind of stress, and I don't know, I'm sure it comes from many different places for many different reasons and every different person. But for me, I think that I was just always in that place. And so any kind of exercise for me, like I should have just been walking or very low yoga, my whole low impact low yoga, like my whole life. I just think most people don't think that. They think, okay, well, I'm pretty healthy. I can go to CrossFit. And then they don't realize it for a couple of days when they're not recovering. Their muscles are sore for days. And you, like, I would just sleep. I would come from working out, have tons of energy, sleep like the dead, wake up the next day, be exhausted and not recover. Muscles would just be sore for days. And those little signs, but you're like, yeah, I'm working out. It's those little signs where it's like, okay, I'm definitely not metabolically sound. I'm not metabolically healthy because I'm not able to manage my energy. Like just in my, an outward appearance to people are like, oh, that person's super hyperthyroid. So I don't know. I think that's interesting what you said about, you know, you have to know the workout for the person too.
Hello, quick interruption to tell you about the in-home dried urine Dutch Complete hormone test. It's not enough to just know your levels, high or low, but for example, what are you doing with your estrogen? Is it being pushed down unhealthy, potentially dangerous pathways that could lead to breast or prostate cancer, fibroids, or insulin resistance? Or are you converting your testosterone into estrogen and having hair loss and low libido? Or are your adrenals burnt out and at the root of all your hormonal struggles? No point in guessing. I love this test. I take it once a year and it keeps me on track with my goal of aging gracefully. Use your coupon ED25, as in estrogen dominance 25, and get $25 off your test interpretation and 6-week program of supplement, detox, and dietary recommendations. I have 5 years of experience reading and interpreting this test and was trained by the makers, Precision Analytical. Coupled with my gut health expertise, and this program is about as comprehensive as you're going to get. Check it out in the show notes for more details.
So can you speak on hyperthyroid? Like, is that just chronically hypo? Someone who's chronically hypo?
Usually, right. I don't think I've ever met anybody that's actually hyperthyroid. I think I've seen people that have gone into a hyperthyroid state and we've actually used I'm trying to think of this one individual. We had to use like cooked cabbage and stuff to kind of bring it down. They had a goiter. And what would happen is they started taking progesterone, and progesterone can sometimes stimulate the goiter and the thyroid to dump a ton of thyroid at one time. So all of a sudden they went into a hyper state. And so we had to kind of bring it down for a little bit. So we had a lot of cabbage, a lot of goitrogen and vegetables, and that does help it. But that's like one situation. It was essentially because, like I said, she had a goiter and all that thyroid got dumped. Mm. But for the most part, I would say if people think that sometimes their doctors, I think, might tell them, but usually they're in a hyperadrenaline state and not a hyperthyroid, because they'll have symptoms of hypothyroidism, uh-huh. right? They're having all the sleep issues and the gut issues and the period issues. And so they're having all those symptoms that we would put into hypothyroidism, but are feeling a little bit wiry and they can't gain weight and they're, you know, so they're being told, well, you must be like hyper because you, yeah. you know, in that space. And it's usually, if you look at their diet, they're not eating enough, or they're not eating the carbohydrates, or they're skipping meals all day. And it's just kind of perpetuating that cycle. People that, you know, we find that have like also a busy mind. If you have a very busy mind that's constantly worried in that state of panic or stress, I mean, you're kind of in that fight or flight. Your nervous system is just being activated all the time. It's not getting mm-hmm. well fueled. Your nervous system is a huge glucose sugar consumer. So in the world of sugar is so bad, I think so many people are becoming mentally unstable because of that entire recommendation, especially women, because they do not want to gain weight, especially when they get older. It's just like, oh my God, I got to do everything I possibly can. So they just avoid it like the plague. And the next thing you know, they're on anti-anxiety meds, antidepressants. They're probably adding it on to some sort of hormone replacement therapy. There's like a plethora of drugs these women start taking who are trying to be healthy and are eating all of these health foods per se, and are just medicated up the yin yang. Mm-hmm. They also start to see high levels. They're starting to becoming like, I can see like osteopenia or even osteoporosis in their 60s. Now, women certainly do lose some bone mass when they enter into menopause. Mm-hmm. But again, that's happening because of a stress cycle. Your body's becoming in that catabolic state. Cortisol is certainly going to help perpetuate your women losing more bone as they get older. So if you stay and you have these catabolic hormones like raging through you, yeah, you're going to see those things happen much quicker. So we have to pull you back to balance. And to do that, it might be taking some of these adrenaline things that you might like away from you mm-hmm. for a bit, but also supporting you nutritionally, getting more carbohydrates and balancing it, getting enough good proteins in, which usually is animal protein, not vegetable protein, getting foods that are really easy to digest that you can tolerate them, and building that up. And yes, one of the side effects can be that you might gain some weight during that process. Mm-hmm. Is it inevitable for everybody? No, but it's more challenging to do as you get older and not gain weight, especially if you've been in that cycle for 20, 30 plus years. You know, mm-hmm. if you've been in it for 5 or 10, it's not, we can, and even if you do, it's easier to get it off. As you get older, it makes it a little more challenging. It still can be done. We just have to be a lot more strategic mm-hmm. with that process.
So you said the body can relearn how to utilize carbohydrates in a healthy mm-hmm. way. And so yeah. does that mean that, you know, does that come with, you know, thyroid support as well as obviously diet changes and reducing your stress and all that? But is a thyroid glandular always part of the mix here when someone is hypothyroid or has a slow thyroid?
No, it certainly doesn't have to be, right? Your thyroid is like your, I refer to it as like your accelerator. It's like telling your cells to use energy at a faster rate, right? So you want to speed that up. But again, if you don't have the fuel available or the nutrition available, because again, cellular respiration takes a significant amount of nutrients. Mm-hmm. So especially glucose metabolism. So the high amount of B vitamins, zinc, copper, magnesium, all of these nutrients are needed to utilize and create ATP. And so if you're lacking in any of those, we might get a block somewhere. And so they aren't able to produce the energy. The energy could be there. You're eating it. We just can't convert it. So somebody can still feel fatigued and is gaining weight, even though they might need 2000 calories, right? If they eat a certain amount, they might still be gaining weight. So it's a kind of a slow strategic process, focusing mm-hmm. on high nutrient rich foods that might be really bioavailable to them, which again are like animal proteins, right? A lot of mm-hmm. nutrients in those foods, a lot more bioavailable than a vegetarian source protein and just vegetarian foods. because they're just not wound up in all this cellulose and anti-nutrients that might inhibit you from getting the nutrients out of that food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of it. And then it's trying to slowly build up your body's ability to utilize the energy, right? I always look at energy is like gas to your body, and the nutrients are the oil. You need both, right? If you give your car just oil and no gas, it's not going to go. Same mm-hmm. thing. If you give it gas with no oil, not going to go. You mm-hmm. need both, and they both utilize, right? So if you have an engine that's utilizing gas at a high rate, I always refer to it as the Ferrari, right? You're going to use and go at this high rate and have a really good engine, you'll use gas faster, and you're going to use oil, the nutrients, faster, mm-hmm. which means you have to replace all that faster, right? So that means you have to keep eating, and you have to keep filling your bucket with nutrition. Or guess what happens? If one of those is lacking, you break down.
Mm.
So eating to support your body metabolically is going to give you really good health. However, mm-hmm. when you increase someone's metabolism and you give them a ton of nutrients, and now that you're using them at a high rate, if you all of a sudden decide not to do that, like people, I think in their brains think everything's 60, 90 days, and then I can just do whatever.
Right.
Right. If you build that up and eat all those foods and then all decide to just not and eat a bunch of junk, yeah, you're not going to be invincible. Your health will start to decline again.
Yeah.
Now you've built that up. So it is a responsibility to say, this is the way I'm going to live, because I want to live a full, healthy, long life without a lot of disease or illness or feel like crap and with energy, but I have to keep doing that, right? Health takes responsibility. It takes energy. It takes preparation. It takes a commitment, and it is a lifestyle like anything else. Once you start doing it and you reap the benefits, hopefully that will motivate you to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that it's ever like, okay, we're just going to do this for 90 days.
Yeah. Right?
That's not that.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to avoid, you know, relaying all this information in the group. I'm trying to avoid it sounding like a diet. I'm trying to avoid using the word diet and just saying, you know, this is just a lifestyle to support your metabolic function and all the foundations of, you know, of digestion and hormone balance all come from living a lifestyle where you're eating bioavailable food. I was thinking one of the reasons that I probably am also going, having better BMs is because I have always eaten tons of vegetables with all my meals.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from, you know, leafy greens to the, you know, the squashes and all that stuff, but the leafy greens and the green beans and the bok choys and all that stuff, like a lot, like with every single meal.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped. You know, I do enjoy some vegetables, like leafy mm-hmm. green vegetables, like green beans and broccoli, but it's funny how when I stopped doing that, you know, I started having more bowel movements. And when I was having bowel movements before, there was definitely undigested vegetables, you know, mm-hmm. especially go for a colonic and you're like, oh, wow, I thought I chewed that, you know, and it's just I'm just not digesting it. And that's,
yeah, most humans can't digest a lot of those foods. We're just not built to really break those foods down mm-hmm. to some degree, right? If you certainly have a sluggish, slow, compromised GI system, then you're really not going to be able to break them down. So although they might be filled with nutrition, right? So we're certainly told to eat those foods because they're kind of low calorie, high nutrient foods.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the thought process. But if you give a body that's under fueled a bunch of low calorie food, well, where are we getting the energy to break that food up? Right? We have to pull it from somewhere, or we just don't break it down very well. So there's that. So then we're basically dumping half that food back through our stool. So we're not even getting the nutrients that we thought we were getting because mm-hmm. we aren't able to break it down. So there's that caveat, right? So who cares if it has high nutrition? If you can't digest and absorb it, it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're just excreting it through your body. So that we have to think about it. So certainly cooking it beforehand will certainly help your body able to break it down and utilize that energy. Plus it also lowers the anti-nutrients or things that might be in that food that kind of bind to it. Then it also can bind to certain minerals and take things out. So we want to lower that, because why eat the food? And that's why a lot of the raw vegetables are not recommended, because they are high in anti-nutrients and they mm-hmm. can inhibit certain nutrient absorption. And because if you have a GI issue, you're not breaking it down, And that kind of bacteria or high fibrous food that you're not breaking down will feed certain bacteria in your GI, compromising your making it sluggish, making it slow, making it, you know, GI permeability. So that things are leaking into your blood system. A lot of things can start happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to demonize those foods, because I don't want to demonize any food, because it's food is food. There's no one bad food. But if you are compromised and your gut is sluggish, or you think you have low metabolic issues, then sometimes removing those foods like it did you can certainly help things,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
So the carrot salad. So I was reading about endotoxin and about, you know, how these short chain fatty acids that we need to actually help seal a leaky gut and feed certain colonies of microbes like the estrobilome colony in our bowel for detoxing estrogens and all these different types of colonies of bacteria that need short chain fatty acids, that need some undigestible insoluble fiber. But we can't really have it if you have poor digestion, because then it's going to feed the endotoxin. So it seems like a tough place. And I've had this problem from all these years working with people when I'm like, we need to increase your fiber intake. And then they're like, what have you done to me? And then they get super bloated and have issues. So then we have to back it up and then stick with just certain types of fibers or a supplement. So can you speak a little bit about that confusion there with why it's bad, but carrots are good?
So the belief in the bioenergetic pro-metabolic space is that the small intestine should be quite clean and almost sterile. You actually don't want any bacteria at all in there, only in the large intestine. So part of the purpose is if, and then when people have sluggish GI and you have poor gut motility, the bacteria tend to move into places we don't want them. And that's where you can get things like the SIBO or leaky gut or so forth. So the whole point is the carrot in itself is because it's a below ground vegetable, that it's quite a lot safer for your GI system than these above ground vegetables or leaves, because those actually have far more anti-nutrients in them. We don't technically digest the carrot either. It has insoluble and soluble fiber. So you can even see parts of the carrot still in your stool, but it doesn't seem to feed the bacteria like your spinach would be. Just because it doesn't have the same kind of properties. So we see it's kind of much safer. We kind of look at it like it's a Brillo pad in the GI system. And that's why you want to add things like coconut oil and vinegar, because they also have a lot of antimicrobial, antifungal, antibacterial properties in them that can kind of clean out your GI for you and help things move faster and better and so forth. You know, fiber in itself is a binder. And so it certainly can also bind to things like cholesterol and estrogen. So, you know, as your liver kind of dumps stuff into the intestinal area or the stomach, you want to be able to remove these things. And that's one of the benefits of eating fiber. So if you look at most research, they'll usually say that people that are eating a decent amount of fiber are usually healthier. How this comparison is all working, right? We always have to know, well, who are they comparing it to and what kind of diet? Are they comparing it to a diet where people are eating McDonald's all day long? And so, I mean, normally if people aren't eating any sort of fiber, it's not because they're just eating fruit juice and milk and, you know, they're usually eating crap.
Yeah. Right?
They're not eating any vegetables or fruits or anything at all. It's just kind of like a bunch of processed food. So yeah, if you compare them to them and you say, well, these people are eating more fiber, so they're healthier, which is probably true. Is it the fiber, just the fiber? We don't know. We can't just move that one variable. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be interesting to see a study. Somebody just had all the juices and without the fiber, and then someone had fiber and the vegetables and everything else would be the same. And then monitor them for 10 years. Right. That will never happen. Right. So we take that research with a grain of salt, and you have to kind of see where the comparison is. Mm-hmm. I'm not against fiber. I think you should have some. I think as you get healthier, you probably can have other fiber sources and be totally fine. Right. As the gut starts moving better and you do start to run better and the GI system gets more fuel, you can add more things into it. And the tendency is that you're just going to let it come through. Your body will do what it's supposed to be doing and you'll get rid of it. And what you don't digest, you don't digest.
Okay.
When it is sluggish and your GI is under fueled, because everything needs fuel in your system to work, right? Nothing works on air. Mm-hmm. So we have to, and the GI system just seems one of those things that when you are under stress, and you're utilizing your resources for other things, like breathing or thinking or running from the bear, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever, or doing your work, the GI is the thing that's going to get compromised. It's one of the first things, because your body doesn't need to have good gut function to survive. Mm. It sucks, but you'll still live with really crappy GI function. You're going to live with PMS all the time. You'll live with these things. You'll live with infertility. They suck. You don't want them, but you'll still stay alive. And if your body's in that survival mode all the time, that's what tendencies we see. So mm-hmm. for you to thrive and be able to actually have these things in your body work optimally, we have to make sure that you are internally giving your system enough fuel. And sometimes that requires rest, right? What do you always hear? Digestion works in that parasympathetic state, and that rest and digest. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be constantly running to digest well. And in today's world, we are. We're just not sitting to eat. We're eating in our car. We're going from meeting to meeting, You know, we're just going. Then we're not sleeping well on top of that. So then we're never really recovering. And so it's just, we get into this space where we can't fix anything. And then we're told to go eat less and work out more. And then that just doesn't help at all, right? Now we're pushing ourselves into a more of that stress state, high cortisol state. So then when we do eat, because normally when we do that, eat less for most women and exercise more, they can only do it for a series of time, and then they binge or they go drink 17 bottles of wine or whatever. And because now their body can't utilize that, they just pack it all on.
Wow. Right?
And it's those events that happen because if you literally are under fueling yourself all the time and exercising like a crazy person and never binging, you're not going to put on body fat.
Mm.
Right. Something else has to happen. And so there's always usually a binge cycle usually that occurs with that.
Right.
Because they can't withstand it. And they're finally their body. And because your brain is like, I need sugar. Your brain runs on sugar.
Yeah.
It runs on glucose. And it's finally just going to keep screaming at you until you're like off the rails, sitting in your, you know, closet with a Ben and Jerry's and a box of cookies. Right. And you're like eating away, you know, secretly and feeling like crap and then feel like garbage the next day or whatever, you know. It's so that is usually pretty common in that cycle. And it's frustrating though, right? Because then you're like torturing yourself for 6 days and then you binge it all and then you're torturing yourself. And it's just not a fun cycle to be in.
Yeah.
You do not have to be in it, but it takes a little time to correct it.
Yeah, let's revisit that whole concept of like, you know, sugar. So when I bring up diet in the group, I'm telling you, it's the one thing that we get fireworks from. People just lose it, especially not just diet, but if you bring up sugar, and it's both sides of the fence, people get really irate and very passionate about both sides of this. But you know, the people who say sugar is like cocaine, it's addictive. I know, I've been there. I know what it's like to crave sugar. And, you know, I think it was Jay Feldman that was saying, yeah, but they're not craving like a tablespoon of coconut sugar. They're craving donuts and chocolate and candy and sodas and
highly palatable food.
Yeah, which is not just sugar. That's sugar plus, right? It's sugar plus fat and all kinds of flavorings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I know this will never be settled, really. It's kind of like the vitamin D discussion. But in our own minds, in our own lives, and the science might say it's settled. But there are people that are always going to say, I just will not do sugar. And what do you have to say to those people?
Well, all I can say is you don't give your body sugar, your body will make its own. That's how valuable it is, right? Your body has a process called gluconeogenesis. And when you don't give yourself enough carbohydrates, it literally breaks down your own tissue to produce its own sugar. So it's so valuable, right? Fat doesn't have that process. Protein is pretty important, but we don't have another mechanism to make it. We have to consume protein. But if you don't consume carbs, cool. Gluconeogenesis is going to happen in you, right? We have to regulate your blood sugar. If you don't, if you drop it too low, you die. So again, your body has certain adaptive processes in it to help regulate something that's so vitally important. The other thing that happens when you don't consume enough carbohydrates, because again, it's your cell's preferred source of energy, is your metabolism will start to drop. It starts to have other effects. You're running in a slight stress cycle because you're not getting this nutrient. So mm-hmm. we already see it in the research. People that go on a ketogenic diet do have higher levels of cortisol initially. They will start to adapt to the process, and they are going to produce ketones and so forth. And so I think they can survive on that probably for quite some time. I don't see many middle-aged women doing ketogenic diets. I think it's very, very bad for them. Certainly I see it in women in their 30s and 40s. I think as these women who are doing it in their 30s and 40s start doing it longer, they're going to start having some negative things happen to them. I work with a lot of people that have gone post-carnivore, post-ketogenic, that are like, I just can't do it anymore. My hair's starting to fall out. My sleep's starting to go. My hormones are going through the roof. It's not a good diet for mm-hmm. women, especially premenopausal, postmenopausal, any of these women. So that would be the first thing I say to them, right? Because most people don't know that, yeah, you're going to produce your own. Break down your tissue. We're going to produce it. One of the most important things for women as they age is to maintain their muscle mass. We know that if you have a higher basal metabolic rate, you are going to be healthier. You're going to be able to maintain your own body weight much better. Things we can't control with your basal metabolic rate. And let me just say, that's how much energy your body is producing while you're resting. And that is based on your brain's function, your livers, your organs, your skeletal system, and your muscles. They're all utilizing energy while you're in the resting state. The one thing that we can control is your amount of muscle. That is very vital. If you stay in a stress state and avoid your most valuable fuel, your body will start breaking down your muscle to fuel itself. Slowly but surely, that starts happening. What do we complain about? I'm losing muscle. A lot of women say that in their 40s and 50s. I think I'm just losing muscle. I feel like I'm working hard, but it feels like I'm losing it. I'm not as strong.
Not recovering.
I'm trying to work with weights or whatever, but it's not benefiting. Or these are the same women that are using like 3-pound dumbbells to lift weights with, right? And mm-hmm. they're doing all these workouts that are really not going to help maintain or increase their muscle mass, which should be on every woman's bucket as they get older, is an increase or at least maintain your muscle mass. So you don't want to push someone into a catabolic state because it will eat that up. It will slowly but surely start eating up your muscle mass. Even when you put someone in a deficit or you're trying to lose weight with them, it's almost next to impossible to not lose some level of muscle. So eating enough protein is pretty vital, eating carbohydrates, but also weight training, super vital for somebody in that state. So that is one. The other process is, like I said, your brain, everything runs better on carbohydrates. Nobody's saying go and eat a box of cookies. But what I will say to you, probably at some point, if you're trying to give up sugar, there are times when you totally crave it. And it's usually when you're very, very stressed. that's when you want. Because at that high stress, your nervous system thrives and works best on carbohydrates. It's quick energy and it wants it. So the more you stress yourself and activate your nervous system, the more it's going to want it. And so if you try to keep avoiding all of those signals, then you will pay the price eventually. But normally what it normally ends in some sort of binge. And then they overconsume it. And then they're like, I thought about it. It's addictive in me. I totally, gave in again. And I ate that whole box of cookies last night. Now I'm going to give it up for good again. And that's a cycle we see. And usually what happens, though, if you give somebody enough carbohydrates in each meal throughout the day, every craving they've ever had goes away. They're like, I don't want it anymore. And also something interesting that happens, especially the women that like their glass or two of wine at night to calm their system down. If we start giving them regular carbohydrates through the day, and again, healthy choices that have nutrition, so that's usually fruits, tubers, roots, honey, milk, so forth, balanced throughout the day with protein, they don't want their alcohol anymore, or they don't have these cravings for cookies and cakes or whatever, and they can have these foods in their house and they don't want to binge on them, because now their body's getting enough regularly through the day to keep them sane, and now they can manage themselves better. And normally what happens, their mood gets better, they don't feel so reactive all the time. Because a lot of them are just hyped up and anxious and reactive. They don't feel like they want to kill people. I mean, they do. They just feel like, or they start to get in a state where they start getting depressed. So you can get them off their medications. They just feel more regulated. And when we regulate you, then we have a far less of a chance of having all these detrimental chronic diseases start to show up in your 60s or in your 70s, right? Mm-hmm. Women are more prone to strokes. I just read a statistic that women can have strokes at 2 times the rate in their 20s 20 to 39 than men. And then later in life, they're more prone. And it's probably mostly because of the estrogen, or they're probably on birth control or estrogen therapy, and that all leads to blood clotting. But yeah, there's a lot of things that women can experience that we can prevent through diet and an understanding of how your body is functioning and what to look for and what markers to look for. And that's so important, because I think most people don't know how to measure their own health. They're like, I'm gonna go get a lab. I have people that I work with, they're like, what lab should I get? And they have like already like, you know, a boatload of them. I'm like, we don't need any. These are what you're gonna do. Temperature and pulse, monitor your sleep, monitor your bowels, right? Monitor your cycle or your hormones or your mood and your energy. If we can improve those, I assure you the labs will look better at some time. But we don't need to go spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars now seeing. We can, so many things we can do. If everything else is out of whack, we need to work on these other things first.
Yeah, yeah. Labs, I always say they're just another piece to the puzzle, but there's so much we can do without them.
Most definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about coffee now, because you mentioned the sugars. So I am, and this goes also hand in hand with my question for you about if you could revise anything in if you plan on revising anything in your book or change your mind about anything you wrote in your book, would this might be one of them, because I cannot drink coffee. Mm-hmm. I drink it. And like I mentioned before, I was doing the Bulletproof. Even if I have it with sugar and milk, a lot of milk and lots and decent amount of sugar, I still, and it's not every time, but it's almost every time, it'll ruin my day. I will get tremors. My hands will sweat. And this has been me all my life whenever I had coffee. And I know a lot of people like that. And in fact, if I have a cup of coffee at like near noon or afternoon, I won't sleep at night.
Yeah.
And so now I'm even, I don't want to touch the coffee until I really start to see my temperature changing. But can you tell us more about coffee and how it isn't for everybody, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, I don't like to ever say it's not for everybody, but it might not be for you right now in where you are in your healing, right? So coffee is a very beneficial substance, in my opinion, but it doesn't work for everybody. And it's usually because of where they are in their healing. So a lot of foods that I might recommend might not, and same thing like with dairy. Dairy is a wonderful food. Some people can't tolerate it. Does that mean you may not tolerate it after we start doing some work? Yeah, you might be able to tolerate it in 3 months or 6 months, and then we can utilize it because it is a beneficial food. Same thing with coffee. Coffee works almost similar to thyroid. It speeds up your body's ability to utilize sugar. So you're going to use sugar. It's going to pull glucose out of your system much faster. And that can be quite beneficial, right? We all know that sometimes I get my coffee, you get energy, right? It's you're using energy faster. The problem comes if you have that level of anxiety, or you're kind of at the cusp where you've been living in like that stress state for a very long period of time. Your body just doesn't handle it. It just pushes you over the edge. It speeds it up too much. And your body's like, nope, we're not going to do it yet. We can't manage it. So that person's going to feel anxious or nauseous, or certainly going to disturb your sleep later on. A lot of these anxiety things are going to show up. And that's why I think coffee gets a bad rap, because a lot of people that can't use coffee well consume it and they have all these negative effects. They're like, coffee's bad. Coffee's going to cause, you to have a headache or nausea or anxiety. And it can do that in the wrong context. So coffee should always be consumed with food so that you have enough energy when you give yourself a thermogenic, you need the energy along with it, or it's going to create a stress state, right? Okay. Because if we start using coffee and increasing your body's ability to utilize energy and is not there, your blood sugar is going to drop and you're going to create a stress response. Mm. But if we give it enough energy with the coffee, then you'll have it that we can utilize it faster. Again, if your bodies are already in that cusp where you're kind of anxious state, you're just in the healing, it might not be a really good food for you. It may take 3-6 a year for you to be able to tolerate it. And it might start with an ounce. Maybe you just do an ounce of coffee and you do 7 ounces of milk. So you just have a little bit with food and you see how you do with that. And if you're like, okay, that was totally fine, I can do that. Or you can have decaf. So it doesn't, right? Minimal caffeine, a little bit, right? You can still get the other properties of coffee. Mm-hmm. So again, we find out what works for the person. I don't think everybody needs to go out and drink 6 cups of coffee. And right now, But we certainly know in the research that, yeah, 3 cups of coffee a day helps with a lot of illness, with liver cancer, I think with thyroid cancer, all of it. We have a lot of good data on, mm-hmm. on coffee and the health benefits, but in the wrong person, it won't feel well. Mm-hmm. And so it's all it is information, in my opinion. It's just telling you where you're at in your mm-hmm. healing journey. Some people won't just say, I don't really like coffee. I don't want to drink it. Okay, you don't have to, mm-hmm. right? Nothing is being force fed on you.
Right.
Here's the health benefits of it. And this is why we can use it. And here's some good properties for it. Because mm-hmm. it does get a bad rap. And I think if we understand what is happening when we consume it, when we understand our own physiology better, instead of just saying it's bad, it's saying, well, it's just not working for me right now, but maybe it will in 3 months or mm-hmm. 6, right?
I know that, like, I think it was Georgie Dinkoff maybe, or Danny Roddy. Somebody said something about it is reflective on your actual liver health. Like, it's, if you're not able to process it well, it's speaking about the liver. Like, it's indicative of some kind of maybe high liver enzymes, or I don't know, I'm making that part up, but just trying to, do you know if that's true, or if there's something merit?
Well,
to
I mean, it's actually quite helpful for the liver. And it could be that, again, my brain is going that it's maybe your liver doesn't have enough stored glycogen. So if you consume it and you become dysregulated, it's just showing you the state of the health, meaning your body can't manage it. And so there's no glycogen stored in the liver. So you can't manage the effects of coffee. It does, again, it can, your liver needs a decent amount of fuel, particularly stored or glucose, because it runs on its own set of glycogen. So, and it has so many metabolic processes. So if you don't have it fueled properly, things can be sluggish, as they say, or things aren't working as well as they should. And then if you put something like coffee in the mix, which kind of speeds everything up, that could be the effects.
Okay. Got it. Okay. I want to, and is there anything in your book that you would change or revise or anything?
It's interesting. You are the first person that has asked me that question. And
really?
I've always thought about it. Maybe clients have asked me, because it's been,
well, you know why,
7 years.
Cause I've written 3 books, not quite mm-hmm. like yours, but they're, cookbooks, but then they mm-hmm. also have gut health stuff. Mm-hmm. And now I look back on it and I'm like, why did I put grains in there? You know, why did I say that or whatever? So that's one of the reasons. Mm-hmm. But someone also asked in the group, they said something about, I wonder if she's changed her mind about, and I'll look that up while you tell me,
Because a lot of the book is based on your physiology and how it functions, right? So we're saying, all right, how does your body work best? It runs best on glucose. So I certainly recommend carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, also good gut function, right? And I of course go on the basis of trying to remove foods that will be challenging for your GI to break down, whereas giving it foods that are easier. And so that wouldn't change. And certainly on a protein basis, animal proteins, because they're way more bioavailable. I'm a big dairy advocate in the right individual. And so because it's all based on physiology, none of that's changed. What I would say that I might change would be some of the wording. Some places in there, I think I probably reference as PUFAs, as poison, and maybe I felt like afterwards what it did is maybe said, a lot of people read it, because what I don't want to create is just another food phobia in people.
Right.
And so I think some of the words I might use differently. And so okay. saying, look, I don't recommend that. I don't think these foods are good for you. However, there's no horrible food. I mean, if you eat it, you're not going to die, and you can use them. And I do say that in the book, like, if you're going to have these foods, this is a better way to do it. Yeah. But I certainly had people read the book and become all of a sudden like, can't touch green vegetables ever, right? Like, that's their takeaway. And I'm like, I don't want that to be your takeaway. I don't think there is a bad food. I think those foods can be utilized properly. But in the state of healing, in the context of healing, they're best to be removed. In the context of a healthy diet, I think you should be able to pretty much eat anything that your body can manage and that makes you feel good, right? But of course, you know, so is there that 10%, 20% window that you can have other things and your health stays really good? Sure.
Yeah.
It might change for people, but you just don't want to do that food all the time. Yeah. Right. But do I eat a salad? Sure. Do I eat them as regularly as I used to? No. Do, you know, do I think someone with a severely compromised gut should be eating tons of raw lettuce? No. Right. So there is a lot of context, and I feel like I did a decent job, but I definitely got from people afterwards that and of course it just could be how they read it. Cause people do kind of go A to Z, but other than that,
I have it. It's table sugar in coffee, just regular old cane sugar in coffee. And I guess their concern was, I'm sure she knows it was how they make it, how they process it, and the fact that it's not as pure as it seems. One woman has a husband who works in a sugar plant or something, and they said, you know, you definitely don't want to use just regular table sugar.
I would have to converse with him. I mean, my research on refined white table sugar is it's a lot of the impurities are taken out of it when it's all said and done at the end of the day, that I don't think it's sugar, 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 right? It's the same chemical makeup as probably like coconut sugar as all of these organic sugars chemically, right? So sometimes people get freaked out about processing. Highly processed. Well, a lot of things have to go through processing, right? I mean, anytime you cook meat, that's considered processing, right? So I think we have to understand what we're doing. But when you actually look at how sugar is processed and gotten through the refining process, at the end of the day, it's just chemically sugar.
Right.
And I am not afraid, right, of white sugar at all. I think it is valuable in the sense of its energy. And it's a good source of energy. It's an easy to digest energy. If you are metabolically compromised and you can't digest anything, sometimes sugar can be a very useful tool. If you are undernourished, then I wouldn't put white sugar in anybody's diet because every calorie they get needs to have nutrition in it. There is no nutrition in white sugar. Even coconut or all of these other sugars, right, that are out there, there's such small level of nutrition in them, if any, like honey, very little nutrition in it. Does it have some? Yes, but it's very, 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 very small. So I wouldn't ever use any of them as a nutritional food. They're not nutrient rich. As an energy source, totally safe, can be utilized safely in a diet, especially someone that has built their caloric levels up and they just need sources of energy. Right. And they have a ton of nutrition already in their diet. But am I opposed to someone putting a tablespoon of sugar in their coffee if that makes them happy and that makes it taste good? Absolutely not.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think I did that particular question justice because I lost the actual chemical they use to remove the impurities. I lost the name of it and now I can't find it, but that's okay. I'll just,
And I don't think it's left at the end, right? I think at the end of the day, it's what is left. Even like progesterone is being produced from yams or soy.
Right.
But at the end, there's none left.
Right.
It's irrelevant. Synthesized.
Yeah. It's completely, everything is removed. In fact, it doesn't even have to be organic soy because ultimately everything, including any pesticide residue. Gone.
It's the same thing when they talk about, like, I think some B vitamins are made from mold or some of these supplements are made out of mold. And like, but at the end, it's not there.
Right.
So the processing to get there, it changes it. It is all chemicals, right? Food is chemicals. It's all chemicals. And so as long as we're getting to where we are, as long as there's not residue or other things on there, you know, in the world of glyphosate, in the world of some of these herbicides, I would still probably recommend, but you know, we still have organic herbicides or organic fungicides that are being used, maybe not even as tested as much as these other ones. Not to say any of them are good. I don't think they are, but yeah, I would still recommend organic pretty much everything.
Yeah.
That's normally the way I would go.
Okay. And then, I was thinking the other day, you know, there was this big argument in the group about, you know, what the brain needs. And I said, you know, when someone's having a diabetic fit or a hypoglycemic moment, you don't run over with a cup of cod liver oil. You run over with a cup of Coke or orange juice.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's going to save their life, you know?
That's right.
But then the argument started, well, yeah, but that's in an emergency, right? But we're going to burn that fat when we're sleeping. And when else do we burn the fat? Because a lot of women are afraid that it's not going to get burnt if we don't, you know,
and in the context of healing, fat burning is what we actually take you out of that. We want to take people out of lipolysis. We want to have you utilize carbohydrates to get someone in a place where they're utilizing energy better. Mm-hmm. So that's why, yeah. So initially doing something like this, we're getting you away from fat burning.
That's the goal.
Lipolysis, beta oxidation is a stress cycle, right? Sleeping much safer. Like I said, our cells or our muscles and heart will utilize it directly. So it's safe at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So, but do we still burn some during the day? Yes, we're burning all resources. We're not just 100% carbohydrates during the day. We're burning some protein, we're burning some fat. Well, we just want to primarily be utilizing carbohydrates. So we are utilizing other resources, but we don't want to try and burn more fat during the day. That shouldn't be the goal. Shouldn't be like, I'm going to do this workout so I can burn more fat. If that's what you're doing the workout, don't do it. That's not the reason you should be doing a workout. Workout should be for gaining muscle, agility, mm-hmm. coordination, brain function. You enjoy it. You like it. All of those are good reasons to exercise. Mm-hmm. Try to burn body fat doing that exercise, especially in your 40s and 50s, is not a good idea. It's going to just push you back into a stress cycle. And so I see it now. You can, like, I see these women later that get real lean when they're in their later years and they have all sorts of problems going on, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, women actually should not be probably 17% body fat. I was certainly 16, 17% body fat when I was probably in my 20s, well, more in my 30s and even in my 40s. Is that ideal? I don't think so. It's challenging to get to that place without something happening. So can it still happen? Hopefully it can, but for the most women, we are not designed really to be that lean. We should mm-hmm. probably have 25% body fat on us. So that's probably healthier for us. A lot of women are like, no, I don't like that. You know, and they can adjust, right? You can certainly put somebody in some metabolic deficits for certain periods of time to try to get their body fat down lower, mm-hmm. but it's challenging, especially as you get older, you know? And so you have to decide at probably some point where's my goal? What do I want to do? Do I want to be healthier? And usually when women fall off the edge and feel crappy, they want to feel better. And mm-hmm. then at that point, we can put them into some cycles, you know, focusing on training. And then if they're healthy, putting them into some levels of deficits to help their system burn more fat, but doing it strategically and not keeping them there for long periods of time.
Okay. So what I wanted to touch back on, you mentioned progesterone activating thyroid. So in the group, we talk a lot about, and because I work with Ona's, Ona's natural progesterone. We've been saying that when women start to take progesterone, oftentimes if they have any kind of adrenal exhaustion or they're in a hypometabolic state, they can convert that progesterone to cortisol. And then they're having this progesterone steal. And we don't know who that's going to happen to, because I myself was very, as I mentioned, hypometabolic my whole life. And in that state. But when I took progesterone, it actually did the opposite, because I really convert it to that allopregnanolone and I favor that pathway. So it was great for me. But for some women, they'll put on a bunch of weight right when they start it, or they'll have this panic attacks, anxiety, this state of like erratic feeling, buzzing in their chest. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard anyone say that it's causing the thyroid to dump. So could it be both of these, or do you have something, some more input on that concept?
So everything I read, and I know there's certain doctors that actually say that you can convert progesterone that you are not making into cortisol. I don't think that that is actually possible. I think that that only occurs in a body that actually needs cortisol.
Yeah.
If you already have high cortisol and you're taking progesterone, you're not going to convert that exogenous progesterone into cortisol. Now, I've read some doctors make that statement, and I don't think at all. I don't know. I've never seen a measurement for that. I think there's another mechanism of probably what's happening. Mm-hmm. So, if you take progesterone, and let's just say you're low estrogen, or you're menopausal, or you're postmenopausal. And at that point in time, your body's ovaries are not producing any estradiol, but certainly your fat tissues and your other tissues can have and produce estrogen. So without progesterone, estrogen seems to sequester into the tissue. So that's a lot of reason why once someone goes through menopause and they do blood labs on you and they're like, oh, you're low progesterone. You're not ovulating anymore. So of course you're going to be low progesterone, but you're going to bottom out with your estrogen. Now, ovaries are definitely producing less, but doesn't mean your body isn't still producing it other places. It is. So what happens a lot with some women, especially if they're a little imbalanced, in my experience, they take progesterone and what starts happening is estrogen starts coming out of the tissues and starts giving them this kind of estrogen dominance effect. Mm. So they actually feel worse. And so they can put on weight. They start having kind of like headaches and even, I mean, it can stimulate a lot of things because they're kind of getting this estrogen dump into their system and it kind of dysregulates them. So they can either do it much slower or they can just kind of deal with it. It can take 2-3 months of this kind of experience to occur. But without knowing what's happening, it feels like, oh my God, this progesterone is directly making this happen to me without saying what is happening, what could be happening. I don't think most women, it certainly can turn on the thyroid and help support thyroid function. So, you know, for a lot of people, they can take a couple good dosage and that's it. Thyroid function is running better and it can be quite supportive. If I've also found that if someone is under fueled, they're not eating enough, and then you give them something like progesterone, which is metabolic, it can kind of make them hyperadrenaline because they don't have enough fuel to support you giving themselves this substance. So it kind of stimulates them and kind of make them feel worse and kind of make them feel more awake versus rested. And usually I just think it's because there's not enough energy to support this metabolic process, much like when someone consumes coffee and has that experience. Or a lot of women get on thyroid or they get on T3 and have that experience. And they just, their body can't handle something that's stimulating to them. Because again, T3, active thyroid, in a lot of medical circles will say it's very stimulating. And it's going to make, and for the wrong person, it can make them feel quite anxious and active and heart arrhythmias and all these things can start happening. However, in the right person who's well-fueled that actually can utilize it, you can take it right before bed and it'll help you go to sleep. Coffee can actually do that with some people too.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Make them, because it's kind of using fuel and it, that fuel is being utilized to put them into that resting state. Again, sleeping is a very high energy state, still utilizes a lot of fuel. If you don't have any left, right, or you're running on air, you won't sleep. You won't get into that high energy state. So progesterone certainly can help someone get into that place. It can make them feel much, it should make you feel relaxed, should make you feel, can help regulate your blood sugar, can do a lot of really amazing things. But the caveat is, yeah, if they're, I wouldn't do that first. I would say, let's work on your nutrition first, make sure you're getting enough energy and nutrition to before we even add something like that. Because sometimes you can correct it without adding it in.
Yeah. Yeah, we call it estrogen kickback. And a lot of women are able to bypass it just by raising their dose. Of course, we're like a high dose progesterone group where women are doing, you know, like Carol Peterson, pharmacist Carol Peterson, who's kind of an expert in this field. She, you know, is definitely like women with, you know, PMDD can do 400 milligrams and more per day and bypass that phase completely. They've done studies with these groups of women where they're just like, you know, they get to this almost like a saturation point where their estrogen is no longer dominating every time it gets a chance. And when you stay at those low levels, it's almost like you're just antagonizing. And like you said, releasing that estrogen from the tissues, which is causing all of this estrogenic sort of reactions. Yeah. It's pretty, hard, like it's complex, and they're, you know, even the experts of the experts don't, they conflict and they disagree about certain things. And yeah, I 100% agree with the cortisol. In fact, I was reading a study, just an article about progesterone in a journal that said, you know, progesterone is fantastic because it only donates where it's needed. It doesn't come in like estrogen, doesn't come in like testosterone and just convert to estrogen, whether you need it or not. Mm-hmm. It actually is very almost intelligent and elegant in the way that it utilizes itself and donates to make what it needs to, where it needs to, when it needs to. The question is, are we converting? Are we absorbing? And that's been, I think, my biggest rabbit hole that I've gone down, and thank God I found Repeat and you guys, and just to discover why absorption is so different with every woman. And honestly, you keep hitting the nail on the head with, are you fueled?
Are you fueled? Like you just keeps, that's gonna, I might even just call this episode, Are You Fueled? You know, because it, I really hate to say this, but I think it could, you know, I always blame the birth control pill and just all these different things and pesticides and all these things throughout my life. But ultimately, I really think I just was never eating right. And that probably led to absolutely everything, including, you know, infertility. And that's just a shame, just to think it was as simple as, hey, honey, eat a burger. Maybe not a burger, but you know, a grass-fed burger without the bun. So it's really, really probably the most important thing.
Well, it's eating the right foods, but then it's also being able to turn the foods into energy, right? That's the full stretch of metabolism. You have to still be able to convert that energy, absorb it, digest it, and then use it at the cell level to convert. I mean, so all those processes have to be kind of in sync. Certainly in your youth, it's much easier for us to do it. I think to, again, as we've seen with generations, it, our children are becoming less healthy. And they're already having metabolic issues, right? Like right out of the womb. And so it's sad on some level. It's also a little bit frightening. Like, where are we going from here? Like, where can we go from all this if we don't start changing things and having people understand? But with change, and you have to unlearn, as I always said, a lot to get to a place where you're accepting that, you know, maybe white table sugar isn't the horrible thing that's made out to be. But you have to understand it in the right context. And it's, this is not a, like, a, I don't like the diet thought either, because people say, oh, I can eat all these foods and that's going to do it. I'm like, that's not what this is. This is understanding these foods are good. They can be very supportive, but we need to add them in with you when, with an understanding of what we're doing. So I have certainly a lot of people food log, because I'm like, look, it's very important. So we can see how much you're consuming now so that we don't overshoot it, right? Because some of these foods are quite calorically dense on some level, even though they're nutritionally dense. And so you don't want to go in, especially as someone who doesn't want to gain a lot of weight, and just go head over heels. And all of a sudden you're eating 2,000 calories and you've been living off 1,200. Will you gain weight? 100% you will. Can you have a whole mess of other things start to occur because you've just over consumed calories? You can. And especially if you're coming from a diet of green vegetables and boiled chicken, changing it so significantly can be a stress on your system. It's like, whoa, what are you doing to me? And that kind of happened to me when I did it, because I was like all in and changed everything. And I had some symptoms from that. And if we don't understand kind of this process, we can get ourselves stuck, right? Same thing with progesterone. You know, women that have really high levels of estrogen have to take a severely high dose to get kind of past that. And they can get some benefit. But then you also need to say, well, damn, your estrogen's really high. We need to, how can we work on detoxifying that and support those processes to help reduce that, or, you know, maybe stop some of the burden on you? Why are you producing so much estrogen? Why is it there? And so that question should be addressed as well, you know, and while you're maybe working on that with giving them the progesterone.
Getting to the root cause, as they say. Let me see really quick and make sure that I've covered. I think you unknowingly answered loads of these questions already, so I think we can wrap it up. Let me see. There was a question about from a man, which was unusual. Okay, yeah. So it's, I didn't read the whole thing, so I'm going to read it. You're gonna hear it with me for the first time. I'm a slim 6'1 male weighing 77 kilos. My weight rarely fluctuates more than a kilo or two. And no matter what I eat or how much, my weight has never gone beyond 80 kilograms. My challenge, unlike most people, is to maintain body weight and muscle mass. I surf, do yoga. Because I have no stored fuel in the form of body fat, I have a noticeable tipping point in energy during exercise or sport once the food in my stomach has been used up. I also notice the increased tendency for anxiety and anger once I get hungry. What should I be eating and how much? I've noticed since reading your book and eating way more sugars, mostly fruits and raw honey, that my energy levels increase a lot. Also, exactly how much fat per meal do I need? I often will add coconut cream or avocado.
So obviously that's a very personal question, and the answer is I don't know. So for that individual, you know, what you want to do is food log and see what you're doing. How much are you eating, right? Because anytime I hear and that I can't put on body weight, I'm like, okay, well, you're not eating enough, essentially, right? And or you're skipping, and because you're, it sounds like he's a very busy individual, likes activity. If you can't put on body mass, you're not you don't have the foods to do that. So you probably, again, have to eat more. What that looks like, I don't know. Could be 3, 4, 5,000 calories. I don't know what he's eating now. Mm-hmm. If you're eating 2,000, then I would probably say go to 2,500, see what that feels like. Obviously, he's saying, I'm eating more of these foods. I feel better. Okay. Tells me that that's probably a the place right direction. To be. Yeah. If you want to put on more muscle mass, you still have to make sure you have enough protein with that as well. So I don't know what that exact amount is. Generally speaking, I say most people should be, half of their calories should be coming from carbohydrates, maybe a quarter from protein and a quarter from fat. And then again, having a little bit of fat, protein, carbs in every one of those meals. Is that for everybody? No. Does everyone need to be that? No. Some people need more carbs. Some people need less. Some people need more protein. Some people need less. The fat is pretty standard unless someone has severe either insulin resistance or massive blood sugar issues. I could do more or less, but someone that does not utilize sugar well, I actually usually go pretty low fat with them and pull their carbs up and get enough protein in. And then they start to be able to utilize it better. But somebody that is not utilizing sugars well usually is dumping a lot of fat in their blood. And when that happens, that fat can inhibit their body's ability to utilize sugar. So by lowering their ingested fat, usually we can get their body to utilize the sugars much better. Now we can slowly change that. I wouldn't go low fat forever. I would go for a period of time that they start using and regulating blood sugar better. And then we would start upping it again because there's a lot of value in fat. So for that individual, I'm like, look, you need a food log. You need to see what you're eating. And then I would slowly increase it. Carbs, probably for that individual, add all of it in, right? With those kind of ratios set up and just increasing it so that you're feeling better without. And then what he'll usually find for something like that is their muscles will start hurting glycogen better, which will pull water into the tissue and he'll just start filling out and without gaining a lot of body fat.
And testing his temp and pulse, because he could also be in that metabolic state, that hypometabolic state where he's on adrenaline and he's just pooping out his food, right? Like I was forever.
Could be, most certainly, right? Especially if you're eating gut irritating things and for some reason you are having loose stool, so you're releasing a lot of it. But it sounds like he's very active. So you have to keep energy. You've got to eat to keep up with that, right? So again, it's making sure, and you're right, you can check temperature and pulse. He might be having some swings. He's maybe high temperature in the morning, signaling that he's more in that anxiety cortisol state and that food might drop his temperature and pulse. Okay. So or he might be low. I find a lot of those people actually have low body temperature pulse. They think they're like super, super massively high thyroid. I'm like, you're just kind of hyperadrenaline, low thyroid, eating more carbohydrates, more minerals, more nutrients that will, you know, it seems these are kind of complicated and complex topics, but a lot of time the answer is the same thing. You need to make sure you're getting enough nutrition and energy and eating it regularly, and that can a lot of times fix a lot of problems.
Right. Okay. How does BBT and metabolic temp fit in? What if you use a temp drop? Does the temp chart still work for metabolic state?
Did BBT, you get that? So are they measuring their body temperature?
Are they talking about
basal body temperature?
Yeah, basal body temperature. How does basal body temperature and metabolic temperature fit in? What if you use a temp drop? Does the temp chart still work for metabolic state? Sorry, I don't think I understood that question.
Yeah. Did you? No, okay. I don't know what's a temp, like do they get a temp drop or what's a temp drop? Is that a thing?
I thought when I briefly looked over it earlier, I thought that it might have had something to do with your cycle and when your temperature changes. But
So in your cycle, a lady's cycle will increase body temperature with progesterone. So as soon as you ovulate, the corpus luteum is going to release progesterone. Progesterone itself is metabolic, so increases your body temperature. So you can normally expect mid cycle to have a body temperature increase at half a degree to a degree. And once you bleed, you will have a temp drop. So I don't know if she's referencing that. So for a woman in their follicular stage, or once you bleed until you ovulate, you can expect the temperature to be a little bit cooler. So it can be maybe 97.6 to 97.8, or sometimes even a little bit lower. As they ovulate, that morning temperature might go up to 97.8 to all the way to 98.4. or even so it can go higher. So you just kind of need to know your numbers, mm-hmm. what you're at, what's normal for you, and then go. But if you're like really low, if you're like, I'm 96.5 during my follicular phase, and then once I ovulate, I'm 97, right? Those are all low. So mm-hmm. those all could be built up, right? But if you're at 97.8 in that follicular and 98.2 in your luteal phase, and then you have a drop to 97.6 or 97.8, then I would say that's quite normal.
Yeah. Right?
And certainly, yeah, for women, you do have an increase ovulation and a decrease once you bleed. If you're not ever, if your morning temperature isn't changing at all, you are not ovulating. So just note that.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, I think that's kind of it. One woman asked about, which I have heard before, coffee making her breasts tender and sore. I have heard that before, like maybe there's some kind of estrogenic reaction to the coffee. That was a very isolated question that I hadn't.
Well, I guess I would look at it like, again, a fuel issue, the mechanism of what coffee does, right? So if we know that coffee is increasing the body's ability to utilize glucose, there's not enough glucose in the blood and you take coffee, your blood sugar is going to drop. That alone is going to create a stress response if you're sensitive to stress hormones. So you're going to have it elevated. In my world, I look as estrogen is a stress hormone. It increases under shock. It increases in a lot of stressful events. So could it respond? Could her body respond with sore breasts? Possibly. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously she's experiencing that. I'm just trying to think of the mechanism of why it's doing it directly. I think the coffee itself is estrogenic.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking if they have low cortisol and they drink coffee and then that cortisol wants to be made after that, you know, that energy that wants to get made. So maybe the body donates progesterone to make the cortisol, but in the meantime, the estrogen dominates. I don't know, some kind of estrogen taking over moment sounds like to me.
I mean, when we look at hormone structure, right? Because I think we're always told about like that pregnenolone steel and right, so that when you're stressed, cortisol takes the pregnenolone steel, mm-hmm. right? Because in the theory, like you have pregnenolone and then you have progesterone, and then progesterone is basically makes your cortisol, estrogen, testosterone, along with DHEA. So I always look at it like if we're creating a stress response. And we don't have fuel, we will get a stress response. The hormones that will elevate from that response are adrenaline and cortisol, but also estrogen can elevate in a stress response. And so along with other hormones that can all elevate in that kind of series of events. And so if that woman is already sensitive and it doesn't take much to kind of push her over, that could just be the response that she's getting.
Yeah.
When someone regulates, it would be interesting. And I don't know if it happens at different times, right? Is it just happening in the luteal phase? Is it happening anytime during her cycle? Or is it dependent on which hormones may be elevated just in her cycle?
Yeah.
So my brain tends to go to a lot of different spaces. Or maybe it's just really shitty coffee. I don't really know.
Maybe it's a lot of that out there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Maybe it has a bunch of glyphosate on it and other particles in there that have some sort of estrogenic response. I don't know.
Mycotoxins. Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. This was even better than I thought. It was awesome. I appreciate it. Is there anything you want to share with my audience? I know you've got that sugar lover shirt that
I got. Yeah, I have one in literally every color. So I've decided I did a bunch of podcasts this week and I wore it different color every single time.
Nice.
I do have these still. They come in cycles. So they're sold in just 1 week cycles. This is how the company does it. And so, yeah, 50% of the proceeds do go to Dr. Ray Peet because he awesome. Has done awesome work. And I always feel like, you know, we should give back. And this was one way that I thought I could do it. But they're also just fun shirts. Of course, if they haven't read my book, it is a great place to start if you're actually wanting to dive into the world of metabolic health, how to heal your metabolism. And you can buy that on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, audiobook. Wherever. Mm-hmm. Or you can just find me on Instagram or Facebook at Kate Deering Fitness. And my website is katedeering.com. And there's a lot of blogs and a lot of other podcasts on there if they just want to learn more.
Awesome. It's so great to meet you. And I just am really excited about everything you do.
And I love my t-shirt and I get compliments all the time.
I love it. I know. Thank you for sending me that picture. I love when people say that. Yep.
All right. Well, can people hire you for coaching?
Right now I have about a 6-month waiting list, so they can certainly contact me and I can put them on the list. I'm trying to think of other ways to work through this list right now. I actually took a week off of social media trying to just kind of create a dent. I do like to work one-on-one with people because I honestly find everybody so interesting and how we can fix that individual. But they can always contact me. I can always get them on my list. Sometimes there's rare occasions where I just decide to pick people randomly throughout the list and ask them to see if they're ready to do coaching. But they can certainly find out about it on my site.
Oh, I like it. The Kate Deering lottery.
It's the Kate Deering lottery. That's right.
I'll sign up. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Kitty.
I have to say that since we recorded this, which I think was over a month ago, I have implemented a lot of what she recommends in her book. And it's pretty incredible. I have gained weight and I will, you know, be completely transparent about that. And I've gained 10 pounds. And that it's not uncomfortable. Like I trust the system, you know, I trust that, that it's going to shift and I'm going to start burning fuel effectively. But I've also noticed a lot of other really things that like cool things like, sleeping. And also when I do work out, like when I go walking, the pounds just come right off, you know, where before I felt like not when I was doing intermittent fasting, of course the pounds were coming off, but just in general, when I was just living my normal, what I thought was healthy lifestyle, it was hard to lose weight. It was hard to get rid of the belly fat. You know, working out just, it didn't seem to matter. And I would try to, you know, reduce a certain calories and think didn't matter. I couldn't lose it. But the weight that I gain now, I notice it's because I'm kind of sedentary because I partially tore my ACL roller skating. Thank you very much. So yeah, sad, right? And now my roller skating days are behind me, all two of them. Anyway, so I have been a little bit sedentary and I did some traveling and I went home to New Mexico and needless to say, I have not lost any weight. But when I am walking, it just comes off. The pounds just come right off and that's really cool. So those are big changes, you know? And guess what else I did? I started doing 1 ounce of coffee like she recommended because I was just such a jittery person with coffee. And I really want to take advantage of all the benefits that I've read in all of these studies. And so I started doing 1 ounce with like 4 ounces of milk and a little bit of honey. And I don't get jittery. But I don't really notice like any energy difference either. So I think the only reason right now that I'm drinking it is just for the kind of routine. I mean, you know, the ritual of it, and it tastes delicious. And because apparently it's really good for the liver and the brain. And so I'm trying to take advantage of those benefits. And she was correct in saying reduce your dose because some of us are so sensitive to things that I think it's a good idea to like really, really reduce your dosages of certain things because you might, you know, what's normal for the average person might be overdoing it for you, right? So anyway, you can find all her information in the show notes. She does take clients, as she mentioned in the end there, but you'll have to get on the lottery. yeah, I'm just so grateful that she came on because I think that we all learned a lot from her. So don't forget to go to the show notes and click on the Ona's information and get your progesterone. Start, you know, I always tell people, if you have never used it, start with the lower strength. So either start with a 3% or start with a 5%, like Luna Pro 5, Luna Pro 3. And maybe buy the Luna oil so that you can do like 3 drops of that on your gums before you go to sleep. And then do like 1 pump of the Luna Pro 5 in the morning. If you feel any estrogenic reactions come up, you know, any symptoms you have getting worse or something new popping up, like an estrogenic, like a migraine, or, you know, you start spotting or whatever, add another pump in the middle of the day and start there. That's a great place to start. And so the coupon code for that is also in the show notes. And so is Kate's book link and all that. All right, friends, we'll talk to you soon. Yay!